Greetings, Mr. Horn. It's an honor to have you here on the Ministry of Information. You're a world-renowned scholar, internationally known. I've gotten a lot from your work, and it's an honor to be able to ask you a few questions, man. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
World War III seems to be actively in full effect. I wanted to take this opportunity to discuss the history behind major conflicts in the world that include black people. To kick it off, Haiti has been under a UN occupation for over a decade. In October, the UN approved an intervention / invasion that the Kenyan government has agreed to take part in. Can you explain a little bit about the history of Haiti and how we got to this moment?
Well, your audience needs to realize that when the Haitian Revolution was detonated, 1791 to 1804, it not only was a blow against an exploited system of slavery that had ensnared millions of Africans, it upset an entire social system. It would be as if capitalism were overthrown in the United States of America. Not only that, but it contributed to a general crisis of the entire slave system in the hemisphere, including in the United States of America, and that crisis can only be resolved with its collapse, which it did, as you know, in the United States in 1865, when enslavers had their property in human bodies seized without compensation. Now, if you want to make an exploiter angry, take their property and do not compensate them after taking it. Because of the world historic importance of the Haitian Revolution, it attracted the negative attention, the furious attention of exploiters in the hemisphere, not least the United States, which then embarked on a campaign to destabilize the Haitian Revolution, not unlike, by the way, the ongoing campaign to destabilize the Cuban Revolution, ignited in January 1959. And exploiters, unlike many in our community, have a long memory. And even though some of us who have benefited from the sacrifices of the Haitian revolutionaries may have forgotten their immense sacrifices, those who profited from the exploitation of enslaving Africans have yet to forgive, have yet to forget, which brings us to what you introduced a moment or two ago, that is to say, the ongoing attempted destabilization of Haiti, a direct result of fury about the Haitian Revolution. And sadly and tragically, they've been able to inveigle the Kenyan government, which really should know better, to embark on this path of trying to send forces across the Atlantic, across the Caribbean Sea into Haiti. Now, as of this moment, President Ruto in Nairobi is being blocked by members of the parliament. But there's no guarantee that that blockage will continue. So we should continue to be resolute in our defense of our brothers and sisters in the Caribbean.
Can you talk a little bit about how natural resource rich Haiti is and why European powers refuse to let what they call the Pearl of the Antilles flourish?
Well, Haiti, to begin with, was an island exploited by the French. And of course, they suffered grievously, speaking of the slave owners, when they were booted out in 1804, and then many of them moved to New Orleans, to Savannah, to Charleston, to Norfolk, to Philadelphia to continue their campaign. The French turned Haiti into a kind of sugar island. It suggested that Haiti was probably the most profitable colony that then existed before 1804 because of the gross exploitation of the Africans who toiled on the sugar plantations. It has also been suggested that Haiti is a repository of vast natural resources, including, for example, gold. But what's happened is that because of the intentional neglect of Haiti by the exploiting class, that it has not been possible to exploit that gold to the extent that it could deliver wealth into the coffers of Haiti. I should also say, and I should have said this at the top, that in the 20th century, actually between 1915 and 1934, to be precise, the U.S. sent occupying forces to Haiti, and I'm happy to say that many Black Americans objected to that process. But it's also important to note that when those U.S. military men arrived in Haiti, they walked into the National Bank and took custody of Haiti's gold reserves, which is about the equivalent of $13 million or $15 million today. So Haiti has been treated quite shabbily by the United States of America, and it's a direct result, as noted, of the gumption of Africans in Haiti to revolt against enslavement.
Just to switch gears a little bit, and let's take it to the Congo. The history of the Congo is a brutal one of rape, murder, theft, environmental terrorism, slavery, and more. Can you give us a brief history of the Congo and how we got to a point where Uganda and Rwanda has murdered over 10 million people for their European, Israeli, and American masters to exploit the wealth of the heart of Africa?
Well, before I turn to the Congo, let me also mention that Haiti has various forms of oil in addition to various agricultural products, including bananas, cocoa, mangoes. A lot of Major League Baseballs are manufactured by Haitian workers.
And iridium, right? Iridium, the mineral?
Yes, and I could go on in that vein. But with regard to Congo, now I'm speaking of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's named today because, of course, there are two Congos. There is the former People's Republic of the Congo, Congo Brazzaville, now known as Republic of the Congo. It's on one side of the Congo River. It's the smaller Congo exploited by France, colonized by France. And then on the other side of the Congo River is the Belgian Congo, now known as the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You may recall that at the so-called Congress of Berlin in the 1880s, the European powers, and by the way, the United States had a seat at that Congress, they basically carved up a good deal of Africa like a Thanksgiving turkey. And what is now the Democratic Republic of the Congo was turned over as a personal preserve to King Leopold of Brussels, who then ignited a reign of terror against the Congo. Because if you think that Haiti has natural resources, then you really need to look at the Congo, because, of course, the Congo is much larger. It has coltan, which is an item in your mobile phones. It has all manner of mineral wealth in the Congo. And as a result, I should also say that King Leopold and his minions engaged in a brutal exploitation that in some ways was worse than slavery, to be blunt. Because what happens in the late 19th century and a good deal of the 20th century in Congo is that the exploiters, if the African workers are not working with the energy that the exploiters preferred, they could have their hands cut off, they could have their feet cut off, etc. So inevitably, this gave rise to robust protests embodied in the figure of one Patrice Lumumba, who led the struggle against Belgian colonialism, helping to bring a kind of independence to Congo by 1960-1961. But alas, what happens is that this is taking place in the midst of a Red Scare and a Cold War. The U.S. manufactures this fantasy that Patrice Lumumba and the opposition, the figures opposing colonialism, were dupes of the Reds, dupes of communists, and that led to his assassination about 1961. And this is after visiting Washington, by the way. Now, what's interesting about that is that this is not a secret. The CIA station chief in Congo at that time, by the name of Larry Devlin, not Devlin, but Devlin, actually wrote a book detailing how he and other CIA cadre actually assisted in this assassination. And in fact, they tried to destroy the evidence, that is to say, by trying to eviscerate the entire body of Patrice Lumumba. And it was only in the last year or so that, as I recall, one of his teeth, a gold tooth, was returned in a ceremony from Brussels, where it had been taken back to its homeland. And in some ways, that's a kind of metaphor for the brutal exploitation of the Congo. And to link the two, many of those who were enslaved in Haiti actually had Congolese roots, just like post-Haitian independence, many Haitians decided to work and help to assist independent Congo. And that would include the family of the great Haitian filmmaker Raoul Peck. You may be familiar with his films such as I Am Not Your Negro, about James Baldwin.
Yes.
He actually did a film about Lumumba, a docudrama.
Right, it was I said it was a great film.
Yes, he's probably our most talented and courageous filmmaker, still turning out the work. I really recommend his film about settler colonialism, Exterminate All the Brutes. It's very instructive about the history of the United States, by the way. And so there are many parallels between Haiti and Congo. And the parallels include not only gross exploitation of the bodies of Africans, but also gross exploitation of the wealth. That is to say, gross exploitation of what's beneath the ground and the people walking on the ground. And to return to Haiti once again, as you commented, Haiti has one of the largest iridium reserves in the world, second only to South Africa. And this is only one of the precious minerals there, including, as noted, gold, silver, copper, all of which may be worth close to $20 billion. And that's probably an underestimate, which makes Haiti such a prize for the capitalist. And that is something that it has in common with today's Democratic Republic of the Congo, which, by the way, is larger in territory than Western Europe.
Wow, I didn't know that. Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, and I don't think people realize, the relationship that all of us have around the world. We are in the information age, the internet age. We have cell phones. Everybody has a number of cell phones and tablets. Would the information age be possible without the exploitation of the Congo?
Well, as already noted, the Congo, Democratic Republic of the Congo, has 60% of world reserves. Coltan, as your question suggested, is a mineral that's found in all of these ubiquitous mobile phones that you see all over the United States of America. One of the problems with getting coltan out of the ground in Congo is that the exploiters have turned to child labor because, of course, they feel that child laborers are more pliable, more compliant than their parents might be, that they can be paid less, that they can be easily disposed of. That's their word, not mine. And this makes coltan even more important, not only because of its deployment in mobile phones, but also in laptops and also other kinds of electronics as well. So the Democratic Republic of the Congo, there's been accusations that there is a kind of slavery existing in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Coltan also is highly toxic. It's blamed for birth defects in the area where it is mined. With regard to the question of slavery, it's also a kind of child slavery. And it's been estimated that there may be up to 6,000 child slaves working in the mines of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Also, I should say that coltan is radioactive, which probably contributes to the toxicity or making it contribute to birth defects, for example. And I should also say that Congo is not alone with regard to this having this mineral. Rwanda, neighboring Rwanda, also has substantial reserves of coltan, also known as tantalum. And Rwanda is reputed to be the world's single largest exporter of this mineral, even though it is only exploiting, as we speak, a small amount of its productive capacity. So I could go on in this vein, but I would also be remiss if I failed to mention that Apple, that trillion-dollar corporation in Northern California, Cupertino, to be precise, is a major beneficiary of this horrendous process, a major beneficiary of the exploitation of child slaves in Congo. And I would hope and imagine that at some point, our comrades and friends in Northern California would have some sort of protest at the Cupertino headquarters of Apple and perhaps make sure that there are cameras there, make sure that there is press there, because ultimately what that would do is put pressure on Apple with regard to exploitation and perhaps could prod them to move away from child labor to moving to an adult labor force that's paid handsome and decent wages under tolerable working conditions.
Definitely, I agree. And definitely, I want to be a part of it. People, let's get in contact in Northern California. Let's get with that. BlockReportRadio@gmail.com. Let's get on that. What is the relationship that Israel has had with the Congo? In particular, Israel is known for its technology savviness in the international market. Can you speak to what's Israel's relationship with the Congo?
Well, you need look no further than Dan Gertler, born in 1973, an Israeli billionaire businessman, involved in natural resources, founder and president of the so-called DGI Group. He has diamond and copper mining interests in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, has invested in iron ore, gold, cobalt, oil, agriculture, and banking, very close to the regime, a net worth of $1.2 billion U.S. dollars. interestingly enough, Dan Gertler has been so notorious that even the United States government found it necessary to try to impose sanctions upon him for corruption and involvement in human rights violations. That means that U.S. citizens face up to 20 years in prison if they do business with Dan Gertler, but of course, that has not deterred or detained many of them. You might also know that Dan Gertler also served in the notorious Israeli Defense Force, which now, as you know, is committing war crimes in the Gaza Strip. I don't know if I mentioned that he is also involved in diamond mining and, of course, is the father of 12 children, which means that the Gertler family is poised to go on to wreak havoc in Congo for decades to come, unless, of course, we're able to turn the tables on him. Dan Gertler reputedly has connections to the Mossad, which is the Israeli version of the Central Intelligence Agency, and has been involved in all manner of misdeeds within the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So once again, I should mention that Dan Gertler also happens to be the grandson of Moshe Schnitzer, S-C-H-N-I-T-Z-E-R, the founder of the Israeli Diamond Exchange, and I'm sure I need not remind you about blood diamonds, how diamonds, which are much appreciated on this side of the Atlantic, are figuratively dripping with the blood of Africans. So I could go on in this vein with regard to Dan Gertler and his exploitation of Africans and the Congo, but I know our time is expiring.
Last but not least, can we talk a little bit about Cuba? Cuba has had an embargo on it since 1959, after the Cuban Revolution declared victory. Can you speak a little bit about what the history is behind this crippling genocidal embargo? You know, what's the history behind that? And can you speak a little bit about what's going on currently with Cuba?
Well, I mentioned a moment or two ago that the exploiting class, the investor class, have long memories. And not only have they not forgotten the Cuban Revolution ignited January 1st, 1959, many of these exploiters also were burned, figuratively, if not literally, as a result of slave revolts in Cuba in the 19th century. But more recently, I think Cuba has ignited concern in the United States because you know that Henry Kissinger, the war criminal, just passed away the other day at the age of 100. He had a particular animosity towards Cuba because in 1975, when Angola on the west coast of Africa, and as you know, many Black Americans, whether they know it or not, are Angolan ancestry, Angolan heritage, it surged to independence, but then apartheid South Africa was going to try to foil that independence by an invasion. But the Cubans dispatched troops across the Atlantic at a very stiff price for a small, relatively poor country, and defeated the apartheid army on the battlefield, which set the stage for elections in South Africa that brought independence under President Nelson Mandela in 1994. When that happened, that upset the apple cart of many exploiters because Angola, as you probably know, is a major producer of oil. It too has diamonds, and it too was a beneficiary of Cuban largesse. And beneficiaries of Cuban largesse include many in Africa because Cuba not only sends soldiers to fight racists, it also sends doctors and nurses and medics. I lived in Zimbabwe some years ago, and the healthcare system in Zimbabwe was largely dependent upon Cuban doctors and medics. Same was true for Namibia, the northern neighbor of Angola, due north. And so this kind of courage has led inevitably to an embargo, or a blockade, I should say, against Cuba, trying to strangle the revolution, just as the United States helped to cripple the Haitian revolution. But the 20th century, I'm happy to say, is different than the 19th century. That is to say, Cuba has more allies in the 20th century and 21st century than Haiti was able to muster in the 19th century. And so Cuba has been able to survive. As a matter of fact, Cuba is so prestigious in the international community that myself and others have recommended that Cuba serve as a mediator between Guyana and Venezuela, who are neighbors, who may be, I'm afraid to say, on the verge of war because of a territorial conflict. There's probably only one nation that's trusted by both sides and can mediate credibly, and that's Cuba. So Cuba plays an outsized role in the world. It plays an outsized role in the Caribbean. And in fact, some of us have suggested, to come full circle, that those who are truly concerned about resolving disputes in today's Haiti really should call upon the Cubans to be involved. But as you know, that would anger and infuriate Uncle Sam. And so right now, that's not on the table.
So right before we get out of here, can you refer us to, I know you have a pantheon of books, but can you refer us to some of the books that you have that cover some of the subject matter that we covered today?
Well, you know, I wrote a book on the Haitian Revolution, Confronting Black Jacobins, a sort of sequel, or if you like, the book by the late Trinidadian scholar C.L.L. James, his book called Black Jacobins. I wrote a book on the Cuban Revolution and Cuba, Race to Revolution, United States and Cuba during slavery and Jim Crow. I wrote a book on Southern Africa that deals with what I just described, white supremacy confronted, U.S. imperialism and anti-communism versus the liberation of Southern Africa from Rhodes to Mandela. I lived in Zimbabwe, as I mentioned. I did a book on Zimbabwe, From the Barrel of a Gun is the title. So that's all I can think of right now. Oh, yeah, I did a book on Kenya, Mau Mau and Harlem, with a question mark. The U.S. and the liberation of Kenya.
Did you do anything on Lumumba or the Congo?
Only in the context of my book, White Supremacy Confronted, because I deal with the successor, the unfortunate successor to Lumumba, speaking of the man once known as Joseph Mobutu, a kleptocrat, a thief, a murderer. And I deal with him at length in that book because he too was collaborating with apartheid South Africa.
Well, how do people stay in tune with you online? Do you have an online presence that people can hit up?
Well, yes, my Facebook page. And by the way, on my Facebook page, you can find an announcement that I'll be speaking in Los Angeles. I know that's due south, but still, I'll be speaking there on February 3rd, 2024, in Leimert Park. Be there or be square. There is an Instagram under my name. And of course, I have enough YouTube lectures and videos to occupy you for the rest of your life.
Well, right on, man. I want to just salute you, salute your work. It was an honor interviewing you today. Hope to be in touch with you a lot more. And until next time, wait, last but not least, you also have a radio show. Can you pump your radio show?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. God, my co-producers would be very angry if I didn't do a shout out to Freedom Now on KPFK, the sister station to KPFA, on Saturday, 11 a.m. Pacific. And if I must say so myself, I think we do a very good job of bringing information to our audience, akin to what I'm bringing to your audience right now. That is to say, information about Black Americans in particular, although we do cover the Caribbean and Africa, but we specialize a lot on the struggles, and I do mean struggles, particularly slave revolts, strikes, protests that Black Americans have been involved in historically to bring us to this point.
All right. Well, thank you. I will tune in. I hope others tune in to Saturday's Freedom Now. And I appreciate you coming on the Ministry of Information.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Peace.